The University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and major public research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries at UWM today. Here's the host of UWM Today, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor for University Relations and Communications.
In one of the few examples of bipartisanship on environmental issues, the Wisconsin State Legislature this summer approved legislation banning the use of tiny plastic particles called microbeads that often appear in personal care products. The problem with those microbeads is that they have been flushed into our lakes and streams, creating a hazard for fish and other aquatic life. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk about the health of our water environment with two experts from UWM's School of Freshwater Sciences, Professor Sandra McClellan and Professor Rebecca Clapper. Both have devoted much of their professional careers to the study of the places that many of us here in Wisconsin hold so near and dear, our lakes, our rivers and streams, and the beaches surrounding them. Welcome to both of you, ladies. Great to have you in the studio. And Rebecca, I think I'll start with you because of this relatively recent news, late-breaking news, about legislation designed to help protect part of our waterways, the microbeads. You actually provided testimony to the legislature on this issue.
Yeah, it was. It's interesting that states have taken this up as an issue. It's definitely been in the public mind, the little plastic particles that you can see in shampoos and soaps and toothpaste and other things that don't necessarily need to be there, but they're used as abrasives. And they have the potential for accumulating out in the environment. There are several researchers at Loyola and with the U.S. Geological Survey that have been monitoring these little plastic things that have been accumulating, little tiny pieces that we find in the sediment structure of the lakes and streams around here.
And the challenge is that these things can sit there for a long time, and they come remarkably close to what a fish egg looks like, right?
Yeah, and you know, there are little organisms at the bottom of the food chain that pick up particles really regularly as part of their food resource. And so these things might potentially accumulate up the food chain, and there's been some indication that they've been found in tissues. And an additional concern is that because they're plastic, sticky particles, that they might accumulate some of the contaminants that are also found in our sediments and be a vehicle for these things to bioaccumulate up the food chain.
You know, some people may say, well, why can't we just take them out of the water? Sandra, you worked very closely with the sewage district. You have a good sense of what the capacity of these treatment plants is and isn't. Not everything can be cleaned out of our sewage before the water is returned to the lakes and streams, can it?
Right, exactly. The sewage treatment train is really optimized for taking out nutrients and chewing up bad bacteria, like pathogens that can make us sick. So when we have different things in the waste stream, they can, especially small particles, they can pass through. And they're not like bacteria where we can disinfect them and kill them. They're plastic particles. And that goes with some of the other kind of chemicals that Rebecca studies where they're relatively new on the scene, so bacteria don't know how to chew them up. They haven't seen those chemicals very often, whereas in nature, that's what bacteria do. They chew up things in the environment. So when they see something kind of new and complex, like a pharmaceutical, they just kind of pass it over, and it goes right through the wastewater treatment plant.
This is a good example of the unintended consequences of people or companies trying to provide a service to people. The notion, well, these microparticles, they actually are good in some skincare, or it makes the product work better. But I suspect nobody was thinking two steps down the road to whether or not this was going to create any damage to the environment. They tested on people, but probably not much thought about whether or not this stuff should be allowed out in the environment after people are done using it, right?
Yeah, the whole concept, the life cycle of a chemical really hasn't been fully investigated with some of these things that we use every day. And so it's one of the reasons over the last maybe 10, 15 years, people have started looking at these things. We call them emerging contaminants because they're relatively new in, as far as the scientific literature goes and what we've investigated so far. But now this is becoming a bigger discussion point. When you develop something something in the beginning? Can you think about how it moves through not only a person or a household, but how it moves through the sewage treatment system and then out in the environment, or even some of the other things that end up getting applied in agriculture or used in industry or on cars or on roads? How do those things end up out in the environment?
You know, as a kid, I remember growing up in Cudahy. I'm a Southside kid, grew up in a Southside working class neighborhood, and when we would be working on the car or cleaning out the garage, and you had some gunky water, you had to get rid of something in a can that was liquid. It was very common to go ahead and say, "Well, just dump it down the sewer." And I don't mean the drain pipe for your sanitary sewer. Just dump it down. We've come a long way, haven't we, from those days of being completely neglectful of what the impact of that deliberate action might be.
You know, you bring up a good point about stormwater, because I think when people dump things down the gutter and into the drain, they're not thinking about where those pipes go. And I've really seen a change in the Milwaukee area over the last 10 years about how our citizens are much more savvy and understand more about where the water goes. And you can hardly go down a street now and not see those stormwater drains stenciled saying drains to lake, you know, dump no waste, drains to lake. As short as 15 years ago when I came back to Milwaukee after graduate school, that was still kind of common practice. Dog waste would be dumped into the gutters, oils, yard waste. And I think now people have a much better understanding of, hey, we have to be careful about what we put into, you know, these drains because they are going right to the lake. And it's a direct pipe. There is no treatment between what you put in that drain and where it comes out in the rivers.
Yeah. Well, Sandra, your work on beaches certainly has given us a much different view than the one I think a lot of us had of the contamination that occurs along the places where we like to lay out and enjoy the sun and let the kids run around. You've discovered a lot of things that we didn't really know about why that beach sand may be safe to play in or maybe not so safe to put the kids in.
It's been really interesting to watch over the last 12 years how even my own understanding of where the pollution is coming from has kind of changed. When I first was kind of getting involved in studying beaches, the big question was, why is there E. coli at the beach? And that's a sign that there's some kind of fecal pollution there. And that can be from human sewage, that could be bird waste, that could be waste from agricultural runoff coming down rivers. And when we first started looking at that question, everything was a possibility. And it didn't take too long to look just over our shoulder at that stormwater outfall and start to understand how many, you know, how much bacteria and how many contaminants were coming right to the beach area. So while we had a list of suspects starting out, stormwater has pretty much moved up the list. And now we're to the point of now we know where it's coming from. We're looking at how can we remediate it? How can we stop that water from going across the sand or going directly into our swimming water?
How much water are we talking about that finds its way from those storm sewers directly into the lake that might be filled with contamination? Should you presume that any storm water has collected something along the way that is not good for the lake?
We have never seen clean stormwater, so it's a question of how dirty it is. And there's really two things we worry about stormwater. And the broad one is how much, you know, contaminants have been swept from lawns. Think about all the pesticides when it rains that goes into the streets and down the drain. The nutrients, which can cause, you know, kind of aggravate those algal blooms that really make the beach stink. Pet waste, other kind of waste on the pavement, that's really widespread, and that's directly correlated to how much impervious surface we have. So there's been some really great efforts around the city and in our metro area, especially through the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, to look at green space and green infrastructure and ways to hold that water back. Because ultimately, we want that water to stay on the properties and not be delivered into our rivers and our lake. layered on top of that general pollution, we also worry about just our sewer infrastructure. So when we look at the city being, you know, more than some of these pipes more than 100 years old or nearly 100 years old, we start to have areas of the city leaking sanitary sewage into the ground, and that can reach the stormwater system and just get flushed out. So we're always on the hunt for that really worrisome health risk of, is there any sewage present? And we have a whole research program that's aimed at working with municipalities to really target where there might be problem areas so they can direct resources to fix those problems.
Sandra's work has focused, not entirely, but some of the work that has been celebrated coming out of your laboratory has looked specifically at identifying that source of the beach pollution, the stuff that's bad when you're walking along the beach, and of course in the water there. Rebecca, some of your more recent work has been looking at some of those other new materials that are in the lake. We talked about microbeads, but you've also been taking a hard look at the impact that a lot of the pharmaceuticals that we take on a routine basis are having on the quality of the lake environment.
Yeah, so the pharmaceuticals are, you know, something that comes out in really fairly small quantities compared to other things into our watersheds. And, you know, just like what Sandra was saying about other things, the sewage treatment plant really wasn't designed to take these things out. And so it does do a fairly good job of accumulating some of them in some of the solid matter and stuff in the sewage treatment plant. And so it goes out that way, or it gets broken down a little bit. But we still have measurable quantities going out in the lake. And the question is, at that really small concentration, are they really having any kind of impact? It's way below what a person would take as a dose for a medication. But it's possible that might still have an environmental impact. And so we've been looking at that more closely in our lab. And which of those medications do we need to be concerned about?
And one of the more popular or frequently used drugs, one that is used in the treatment of diabetes, you discovered is, in fact, apparently having an impact on fish life.
Yeah. So there are cases around the United States and elsewhere where there are fish seen that are what we call intersex. So males have some female-looking parts that they shouldn't, you know, the testes are looking more like ova, so they're developing eggs. And the question is, what's causing that? And people have traditionally looked to birth control pill medication, so something that would be feminizing, a hormone. And they found that even tiny quantities of those hormones can cause that kind of impact. And what we were doing was looking at first we looked at what suite of chemicals were coming out of the treatment plant, and we found that we really weren't finding hormones to any measurable degree. But what we were finding, which was kind of a surprise, was this drug metformin, which is not a new medication, actually. It's been around for decades. It's even off patent. But it's taken by a huge chunk of the population that's type 2 diabetic, or what they call now pre-diabetic, where you have a chance of developing diabetes sometime in the future to help control insulin and sugar in your blood.
So I've got a question. If pharmaceuticals, for example, can't entirely be removed in the water treatment process for sewage going out, when we suck the water back in to the water treatment plants for our drinking water, is there anything being done to remove the chemicals at that stage?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And actually, in Milwaukee, it probably plays even less of a role because we're really taking it from such a huge water source. And we did detect pharmaceuticals going out into the lake. We didn't specifically measure right at our water intake, but considering that's farther upstream from, farther away from the sewage treatment plant effluent, we're not as concerned about that. And actually, the water treatment plant has been monitoring for several of these pharmaceuticals and don't find too much coming through, although I don't think they measured for metformin in particular. But it's really important, very important in other parts of the country where they're taking, especially you're hearing about all the droughts that are happening in the southwestern United States and in California, where they have in several cities started processes of taking that sewage water and then recycling it back as potable water, as drinking water, because they have to. There's no other water source. And so there's been a fairly large research program going on in California and other places about what is coming back through their drinking water, because it really is the end of the pipe coming back to the beginning of the pipe.
So they're not diluting it like we do our waste when it goes back into this great big wonderful lake and gets stirred up. And the hope is that, you know, whatever is there becomes smaller and smaller and smaller in terms of quantities.
Right.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. So good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack. Joining us in the studio, two professors from the School of Freshwater Sciences at UWM, the only School of Freshwater Sciences in America, we're proud to say, Sandra McClellan and Rebecca Clapper. So it's midsummer, and a lot of people, if they haven't already been at the beach or on vacation, will soon be there, or at least within driving distance. I'm going to ask both of you if you could get out your scoring pencil and give us a grade on what you think the quality of our beaches and our lakes are at this point in time, knowing that we've all been paying attention to the problems of pollution for years. But, you know, how much progress have we made? Let's start with you, Sandra.
You know, I'm going to go with the kindergarten grading scale where we score it developing or secure. And I'm going to say we're still developing, but we're definitely not back where we were maybe 10 years ago. And it ties back to the emphasis on green infrastructure, rain gardens, ways to keep some of the dirty stormwater off of our beaches. And we can see great improvements up and down our lakeshore from Sturgeon Bay and up in Door County. There's been some great efforts building some stormwater remediation and rain gardens. If you go to our own Bradford Beach, you can see, you know, five great rain gardens that span the beach, and they're around these huge, well, I would say, you know, relatively large structures, these concrete, you know, tubes coming out of the ground with a big iron grate over them. As, you know, as little as 8 years ago, the water coming out of there was dirty stormwater, and it would run right across the beach, and it would contaminate the sand and go into the water, and then when it would rain, it would continue to wash the sand out. And now all of that dirty water is being captured. So we're seeing more and more attention being paid to the actual coastal management of our beaches. So we're definitely improving, but that said, we still have a lot of problems out there. So for every bad stormwater outfall that's gotten some kind of an intervention, there's two or three still discharging stormwater to our beaches.
How about you, Rebecca, in terms of the quality of the lakes?
I think it's kind of a complicated question. So if you're talking about chemicals, I think that, you know, over the last several decades, we've definitely seen water quality improvements across the Great Lakes where the protections that have put in place, you know, we don't see 100 love canals now. We haven't seen any in the recent past. So you know that the protections that have been put in place are doing something. And we're seeing general improvements in some areas of water quality. And we are paying more close attention to what's coming out of our pipes, for instance, both directly and then also, as Sandra was saying, some of the runoff that's happening. However, we have other challenges that are going on in our lake systems. Those in Wisconsin that are going out for 4th of July to the small lakes, to those that are participating in water sports out on our Big Lake Michigan, know that invasive species and other things have had a huge impact on our water systems, whether it's plants, the milfoil, or zebra mussels have changed the whole structure of what our lakes look like and have affected fish populations, which we care so much about, and have tremendously affected water quality, both for the ecosystem and then also for things that we care about as far as fishing and swimming and drinking.
We talk about the zebra mussels, and then there's the quagga mussels, which is you know, another invasive, similar but I guess worse in some ways. Is there anything good about these mussels? Because you know, they literally, as I understand it, there are trillions of them on the floor of Lake Michigan today. In fact, I think Val Klump, one of your associates, has said it would be hard pressed to walk more than 20 or 30 meters without coming across those, if you could walk across the bottom of Lake Michigan. First of all, how bad is that problem? And then secondly, is there anything we can do to get rid of these guys?
They're definitely have changed the whole ecosystem. And Val is totally right. If you go out there and look at the bottom of the lake, it looks totally different than it would have several decades ago. It has changed how the ecosystem functions. It's those mussels have basically eaten up the bottom of the food chain. There are several species of invertebrates, little tiny critters that fish depend on both as young fish and as older fish, to feed on. And we're seeing less of those. And it's believed it's a direct result of these invasive species coming and basically eating up everything that those invertebrates and the fish depend on. And so it's changed how many perch you see. It's changed the whitefish population that other people enjoy. And it's changed the dynamics of the lake tremendously. And what we can do about it, people have been struggling with that for a while. I think a lot of scientists have just kind of come to the realization that, you know, we just have to deal with it and try to monitor it and try to give advice as to how to prevent more of those kinds of invasions from happening.
And, you know, what really strikes me every time I travel and fly either, you know, kind of towards the east and have the opportunity to fly over Lake Michigan. Lake Michigan is huge. And when we think about it, since, you know, the 50s and 60s, we have completely changed the lake every 10 to 15 years due to some large invasion. And it's just stunning that we can change something that large and that complex so quickly over time. And, you know, we can see it since the early 90s with the water clarity and the mussel invasion. And that's probably been one of the more dramatic, you know, kind of shifts. But there's been ones, you know, in previous decades too. So it's a stark reminder that we have to, you know, there's a lot of development around the Great Lakes and we're really impacting the lake.
But there are some success stories. I remember when I was growing up, the sea lamprey was the beast that was taking over the lake. These really snake-like looking creatures that attach themselves and literally suck the life out of fish. We saw them at the Shedd Aquarium earlier this year. My wife and I went down and spent an afternoon there. She had never seen one in person, and you know, she wanted to yelp, this is ugly stuff. But we did, thanks to researchers like you and your colleagues, did find that there are ways to mitigate that by going ahead and seeding the waterways where the lamprey were breeding. And maybe if you guys keep, if you ladies keep doing the research that you and your colleagues are doing, we might find some solutions because we're still, as you point out, Sandra, really early on in terms of this particular contamination.
Yeah, I think, you know, with Lake Michigan and the Great Lakes in general, we're never going to restore them to some kind of a pristine state. They're always going to be a managed system. And it's hard to manage it, you know, one problem at a time. It would be much more effective to deal with it holistically. And I think that's where the science comes in, and especially the interdisciplinary science. When I start working with engineers or work with the people who work with the nutrient cycling in the lake, I understand my own research and what maybe recommendations I might make to address two or three problems rather than just the specific problem I'm looking at.
We don't have too much time left, but I want to make sure that we talk about this because I think our listeners would be interested in knowing what's next. What are the areas that you would like to see your own individual research move, and how important is it that we get resources to do that? Rebecca?
Well, one of the areas that we've started to investigate, and it's actually with the help of a grant from the Argosy Foundation, is looking holistically at the whole going from development of medications all the way through the approval process to use of the medications to disposal and waste stream. And how along that whole pathway could you make differences that would influence how much goes out in the environment? And how could we develop better screening protocols using genomic technologies like our new Great Lakes Genomic Center and other predictive modeling to actually prevent one of those medications from having an environmental impact by knowing ahead of time before it goes through that whole chain what kind of impact it has on the environment.
And you mentioned the Genomic Center. That's another great asset that the School of Freshwater Sciences has now.
Right. And its main focus is using genomic technologies, what's been used now for the last decade or so on in human health, developing predictive tools for why humans get sick and what kind of medications might be helpful for them, and doing the same thing for the environment, maybe not prescribing a medication for the environment, but using it as a tool to tell us how healthy the environment is and what's present in the environment that we care about or would like not to be there.
Sandra, how about you? What kind of research would you like to focus on going forward?
You know, my lab has looked for the last 15 years at ways to track sources of pollution. And as technology has really advanced, especially through some of the technology that's available through the Great Lakes Genomic Center and being able to sequence bacteria, we've gotten to the point where we can pinpoint sources really effectively. So our goal is really to marry that to some of the policy and some of the boots on the ground. Where do we invest the money? And I think, you know, the theme of sustainability is so important. So if we can help direct resources to the worst problems with some of the advanced technology we're developing in the lab, then we could clean up things maybe 10 times more effectively.
What about industry? We've talked about the microbeads. You know, companies make that sort of stuff. Are you finding receptivity on the part of the companies that are responsible for the contaminants that could get into our waterways? Are they trying to step in and provide some insurance that that there is no harm caused?
Yeah, one of my areas of research is looking at the impacts, the potential impacts of nanotechnology. It's a new type of chemical that's being used in everything from computer screens to medicine to all sort of coatings on cars and things like that. And that industry has developed in concert with the environmental health aspects. So they're very receptive to trying to develop these chemicals in a sustainable way so that they don't have an impact on the environment. And so through our Center for Sustainable Nanotechnology that I'm involved with, it's an NSF, National Science Foundation funded center, that's one of the goals. And that particular industry has been very receptive to that idea, preventing, designing a chemical so it's not environmentally toxic.
How about you, Sandra?
You know, I work mostly with municipalities and our local wastewater treatment agency, the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District. And I think our region is really unique in how all of these people kind of work together and share information. So I think we've had really an advantage doing research with all of these partners. We're way ahead of the rest of the country in understanding the system and maybe how we can pair some of the technology and some of the advanced microbiology we do with the kind of regulators and also the managers. So, you know, Milwaukee's really unique in some of the leadership around water we've had, both at the university, but also in the community. And I think that's made a big difference in the end results that we're starting to see, like Bradford Beach getting cleaned up. MillerCoors made a huge investment there, and they're doing the same at South Shore Beach now. We've done the research. We know what's going on. And now, you know, the private sector, like MillerCoors, is stepping in, saying help, saying, you know, we can help with some of the solutions.
Because we're all in it together. It's the lakes, the streams, the beaches, part of the quality of life that make living here what it is today. Great. Well, ladies, thank you so much. You both have done great work in the past. We wish you continued success, and we're going to do all we can to get you the resources to have continued success to see that your work moves forward. Thanks for being our guest today on this edition of UWM Today.
Thank you. Thanks.
Professors Rebecca Clapper and Sandra McClellan, both at the School of Freshwater Sciences at UWM, our guests on this edition of UWM Today. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody, and enjoy those lakes. I'm Tom Lujack.
You have been listening to UWM Today, the weekly program where you meet faculty, staff, and students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee who help make a difference in the lives of people in southeastern Wisconsin through their teaching, research, and community service. To learn more about UWM, go online to uwm.edu.